Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, April 20th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Libraries Remove Pride Displays After Community Complains," by Caitlin Randall. Midland County Public Libraries removed pride displays at its two locations after residents complained that the displays, which featured LGBT books, rainbow banners, and signs with phrases like "You Belong," were inappropriate. The displays were set up at the Downtown and Centennial branches during the beginning of Pride Month in June 2020 and removed by Library Director Debbie Garza about 2 weeks later, according to three former employees. The employees said they frequently made displays for holidays and events like Black History Month as part of their job duties. "I walked into work and the books were stacked on my desk from the display," said Hannah Wupio, a former library clerk. "The signs had been taken down, and my rainbow hearts that I put up were ripped down." A photo taken by Wupio shows piles of books on her desk with a note signed by Garza asking her to reshelve the books. Garza, who previously served as the Dawson County Library Director, was appointed by Midland County Commissioners in the fall of 2019 after John Trischitti III resigned to assume the post of Executive Director of the Midland Development Corporation. The three library employees said staff made pride displays in June 2019 without issue. After the displays were removed the following year, the employees said they were told all displays going forward needed approval from Garza. Garza confirmed that she removed the displays, which were set up in the children and young adult sections, but said many of the books were left on shelves, with some were moved to the adult area. "The books that were on display in the children and young adult sections were written for those age groups," according to the employees. "My goal is to make sure I'm hearing what the employees are saying, but at the same time I have to think about the community as a whole," Garza said. She said the library system strives to be a safe place and promote equality and inclusion. "They're now renewing their policies and procedures regarding displays and exhibits," she said. County Judge Terry Johnson said he and other members of the Commissioner's Court received several complaints about the displays from residents. "People were mad. They were really mad that it was up there," he said. "They hated that little kids were going in and being indoctrinated into that lifestyle." He said he contacted Garza about the displays and said she hadn't seen the presentations and didn't know they had been set up. "Something like that, I believe we should have had some dialogue about, so it was kind of agreed to take it down," Johnson said. "If they want to do it again, I think that's something the court should be involved in, especially when we're the ones getting phone calls about it." The employees said many staff members were upset about the decision to remove the displays and asked Garza for an explanation, which they weren't given. The employees in youth services were very upset about that because they had been trusted to handle book displays before that, said Francis Atha, a former exhibit coordinator. "Having that ability taken away from them and having to have every single display formally approved by Debbie over email after was very upsetting. Wupio said she resigned within a month after the displays were removed, while another employee gave her 2 weeks' notice the day they were taken down. "The whole department was upset, because even if you don't agree with it or the lifestyle, it's still censorship," Wupio said. Several employees expressed concern to Garza that removing the displays violated the American Library Association's Bill of Rights regarding intellectual freedom, according to emails obtained by the Reporter Telegram. Some articles in the ALA Bill of Rights state that exhibit spaces must be made available on an equitable basis, and materials should not be excluded because of the origin, background, or views of those contributing to their creation. When staff said they would need to report the displays removals to the ALA because of possible censorship, Garza responded that if ALA or TLA or any organization is to be contacted, such contact will be made by my office, the emails show. The employee said they interpreted Garza's response as a directive to not report the incident. Upio said she did file a report with the ALA, but did not know the status of that report. A video of one of the Pride displays posted on Facebook on June 4th shows children's LGBT books, rainbow bookmarks, a rainbow banner, and You Belong sign. The post received positive feedback. A former employee in Youth Services Department who spoke on the condition of anonymity said the displays were popular with patrons and staff were often refilling empty shelf spaces after books were checked out. We set up the display, and I will never forget seeing the faces of the teens that I worked so close with light up, she said. A teen cried as she looked at the display. She stayed in the teen area for an hour, just looking at everything, smiling. She said she believed the feelings of staff and LGBT patrons were disregarded when the displays were removed, and the decision was a slap in the face and a horrible realization that homophobia existed within the library administration. Some children and teens who were looking for LGBT books asked library staff what happened to the displays after they were taken down, Wupio said. I said the director had it removed and you could see them die a little bit inside, she said. I did my best to try to narrow down the book they wanted and find it on the shelves, but it was a nightmare. This article is entitled Lee Rebranding Costs at Least $1.447 million by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD board members have approved at least $1.447 million for the rebranding process of Robert E. Lee High School. The board, during its regular board meeting in February, approved the spending of $906,709 for rebranding of the current Lee High School and Lee Freshman High School buildings. Another $100,000 plus contract approved was for $326,596 for uniforms for various programs. The school board, during its March meeting, also approved another $214,606 for various sports uniforms and the rebranding required. Next school year, Legacy replaces Lee for the names for the high school on Neely Avenue and the associated freshman high school. That decision was made in October. The school district stated last fall that the costs associated with the name change of the two schools were estimated at $1.797 million. That means spending thus far is at least 80% of the cost estimated. In a press release Friday, Midland ISD reports preparations are underway to open Legacy High School. Work is also underway to refresh everything from floors and walls to uniforms, the press release stated. Each project is listed on the Midland ISD website, midlandisd.net/rename, along with its cost and status. In October, it was estimated that costs to athletics would top $610,000. Midland ISD on its website reported that football uniforms will cost $283,000. The website also shows more than $256,000 on equipment and uniforms for other sports so far. That does not include the $26,145 for the new run-through tunnel. Costs for replacement football and basketball equipment are TBD. Facility spending on the website this weekend showed $257,000 to replace carpet and flooring and $40,000 to refinish the gym floor. Fall estimates shows costs at $1.16 million for facilities and $70,760 for fine arts and $610,698 for athletics. That included $325,000 for signage, followed by $262,245 for contractors' project cost, and $258,500 for changes to the gyms. The mascot of Legacy High School in Midland will be Revolutionary War Era Rebel. MISD reports that students were given the opportunity to submit drawings of their proposed mascot image in January and that 16 submissions were received. The Citizens Renaming Committee has narrowed the choices down to two frontrunners. The next step is taking the inspiration of the paper and pencil drawings to create digital designs which can be used anywhere a logo is needed, MISD wrote in the press release. Students' vote will determine the final design. This article is entitled DPS Launches Cold Case Investigations Show to Bring Attention to Unsolved Cases in West Texas by Caitlin Randall. The Texas Department of Public Safety will premiere its first episode Tuesday of a YouTube show about unsolved cold cases in Midland, Odessa, and other parts of West Texas. The show, entitled Cold Case Investigations of the Texas Rangers, is in partnership with the Midland County Sheriff's Office and DRB Media Communications. During each episode, we'll highlight a new case in hopes of bringing attention and hopefully encouraging and inspiring someone who may have seen something to come forward, DPS Sergeant Oscar Villarreal said during a press conference on Monday. The episodes will cover unsolved murders, sexual assaults, missing persons, and unidentified human remains, he said. The Midland County Sheriff David Kreiner said several of the Sheriff's Office open homicide investigations will be featured in the series. The Midland County Sheriff's Office welcomes the assistance of Ranger Jeff Strain and his staff, and we look forward to working with the DPS once again, he said. DPS was inspired to create the show because of the success of stories like Unsolved Mysteries and other true crime shows in bringing attention to cold cases and unearthing new details, Villarreal said. With COVID, all the movies and everything was almost at a dead stop. And when you couldn't go to the movies, people wanted to start solving crimes on their own, he said. Each episode will be 3 minutes long and available for streaming on DPS's and DRB Media's YouTube and Facebook pages. The first episode will premiere at 1 p.m. Tuesday. Help us bring closure to families and solve these cases at the same time, Villarreal said. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled COVID Report. Cases down 41%. Vaccines past 90,000 mark. From staff reports. The Midland Health Department reported a 41% decrease in the number of confirmed COVID cases last week. The Health Department showed 65 cases from Midland County residents, which was less than the 111 during the previous week, April 4th to the 10th. The number of cases last week also was the second lowest so far in 2021. Only behind the 61 cases from March 14th to the 20th. The week included 2 days with 10 or more cases. Midland Health also reported that the number of vaccinations administered or provided to other entities in the region has topped 90,000. That includes 61,824 administered at the Horseshoe. Last week, there were more than 3,000 vaccines provided, including 2,649 at the Horseshoe. The Midland Health also reported there were 13 active COVID patients inside Midland Memorial Hospital, including one on a ventilator. There were an additional 6 convalescing patients, including 3 on ventilators. Midland Health reported 26 positive tests at its testing areas last week. That came from 544 tests and resulted in a 4.8% positivity rate, the second lowest this calendar year. This article is entitled P&Z Approves Preliminary Plat of Tract in East Midland, Owned by IDEA Public Schools, by Mella McEwen. Officials with IDEA Public Schools are moving closer to their plans for a new school in East Midland. IDEA Public Schools appeared before the Planning and Zoning Commission with a preliminary plat for a 14.8-acre tract at East Cuthbert Avenue and East Tilden Street. Officials want to replat the property into one lot to develop the new school. This required a public hearing because it was considered a residential replat. 6 of the commissioners approved the request, with the 7th commissioner abstaining from a vote. Commissioners also approved a request by Landgraf, Crutcher and Associates for a zone change from AE, Agricultural Estate District, to PD, Planned Development District, for a shopping center on a 9.92-acre tract at the northwest corner of North State Highway 349 and Tejas. The approval was the first step in the applicant's plans to build a new Tractor Supply store. A request by Gomka Family Restaurant, LLC, to amend its specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for consumption in a restaurant at its Tikalas Restaurant and Bar at 4610 North Garfield became the subject of how the restaurant could gain more flexibility in its alcohol service hours. The request to amend alcohol service hours was made so the restaurant could serve breakfast on the weekends. Instead of alcohol service from 11 a.m. to midnight Monday through Saturday and noon to 11 p.m. on Sunday, the restaurant wanted to serve from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Thursday and Friday, from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday. Commission Chair Reggie Lawrence recommended a change to service hours so the restaurant wouldn't have to come before the commission months from now with another request. He suggested changing the service hours to 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Friday and from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, giving them an additional hour of alcohol service on the weekends. His amendment to the request passed unanimously. This article is entitled, ECISD Police Arrest Student After Social Media Threats, by J.C. Lewis. A student was arrested Monday morning after a threat was made on Instagram. The Ector County ISD Police Department was made aware of a social media threat potentially directed at two ECISD middle schools, according to a press release. The original message, found on an Instagram account, seemed to threaten Bowie Middle School or Crockett Middle School, according to the district. ECISD police began investigating the threat immediately. The student who made the post was identified, taken into custody, and is facing criminal charges. The 13-year-old male admitted to making the post in order to scare people. This is the oil page. This column is entitled, Oil Markets Are a Long Way from Back to Normal. Commentary by Julian Lee, Bloomberg. We're all pinning our hopes on vaccines to free us to meet friends and family, travel, and return something like our normal lives. Oil market forecasters, too, are finally getting a little more optimistic about the recovery in demand that should accompany that return. But a closer look shows we're just not there yet. In their latest monthly reports, the International Energy Agency, the U.S. Energy Information Administration, and the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries all raised their oil demand estimates for 2021. It's the first time since they began publishing such forecasts that they've all been more optimistic than they were a month earlier. As you look a little deeper into the forecasts, one thing becomes abundantly clear. All three agencies are a lot more optimistic about the second half of the year than they are about the first half. That's not surprising, but it does raise some yellow flags for caution. The forecasts are very dependent on the vaccines against COVID-19 being rolled out even more extensively than they are now, and on the inoculations proving effective against variants of the disease that have fueled second or even third wave of infections in some countries. Alongside vaccines, the agencies say their newfound optimism stems from the more upbeat outlook from the International Monetary Fund, which has raised its global economic growth forecast for the second time in 3 months. While President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion stimulus package is a contributing factor, the IMF's bullishness also hangs, to a large extent, on the widespread rollout of effective coronavirus vaccines. That means the oil soothsayers are doubling down on vaccines. And yet it's far too early to say whether they'll provide the deliverance that we're all pining for, much less when. We must avoid getting carried away with our optimism. Mass vaccination campaigns hit headwinds last week from growing concerns over potential links between rare but dangerous blood clots and the AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson shots. The European Union may not renew orders with either company, meaning it wouldn't have 75% of its population fully vaccinated until December. The U.S. could also face setbacks from a pause in administering J&J's vaccines. Japan's vaccination drive only finally got going on Monday. The unequal rollout across the world leaves large populations unprotected, a huge reservoir of potential hosts in which the coronavirus can continue to mutate, possibly in ways that are more dangerous. And this brings us back to oil demand. The easing of restrictions in the U.S. and the U.K. has led to a dramatic recovery in the demand for road fuels, particularly the gasoline used to power private vehicles in the U.S. Gasoline deliveries, a proxy for demand, are within a whisker of their highest level since the pandemic began. Just 60,000 barrels a day, or 0.6% below a post-pandemic peak reached at the height of last year's summer driving season, they are likely to surpass that level very soon. In the UK, government data show road use was at 91% of pre-pandemic levels on April 12th, although private cars still lagged some way behind commercial vehicles. But air travel is still languishing, and may continue to do so. Although U.S. passenger numbers hit their highest level since the start of the pandemic over Easter weekend, they were still more than a third down on the same point in 2019, according to data from the Transport Safety Administration. And that's in a country where domestic flights account for a large part of the total. International flights are lagging much further behind, with cross-border travel still severely restricted across most of the world. Even if those restrictions are eased over the coming months, opening borders in time for summer holidays in the Northern Hemisphere won't necessarily result in the sort of surge in flights that may be needed to achieve the most recent oil demand forecasts. If flying remains too onerous in terms of costly COVID tests, quarantine, or self-isolation requirements, people may choose to holiday far closer to home for a second year instead. The UK's Heathrow Airport, the country's busiest, is already reporting incoming passenger waiting times of up to 6 hours. And that's before foreign travel rules are relaxed. The picture for travel, and with it for the continued recovery in oil demand, may well be rosier than it was a month ago. But we're still a long way from being back to normal. This article is entitled, "Historic Oil Glut Amassed During the Pandemic Has Almost Gone," by Grant Smith and Julian Lee, Bloomberg. Commercial oil inventories across the OECD are already back down to their five-year average. What's left of the surplus is almost entirely concentrated in China, which has been building a permanent petroleum reserve. Ed Morse, head of commodities research at Citigroup, Inc. The unprecedented oil inventory glut that amassed during the coronavirus pandemic is almost gone, underpinning a price recovery that's rescuing producers but vexing consumers. Barely a fifth of the surplus that flooded into the storage tanks of developed economies when oil demand crashed last year remained as of February, according to the International Energy Agency. Since then, the lingering remnants have been whittled away as supplies hoarded at sea plunge, and a key depot in South Africa is depleted. The rebalancing comes as OPEC and its allies keep vast swaths of production offline and a tentative economic recovery rekindles the global fuel demand. It's propping international crude prices near $67 a barrel, a boon for producers, yet an increasing concern for motorists and governments wary of inflation. Commercial oil inventories across the OECD are already back down to their five-year average, said Ed Morse, head of commodities research at Citigroup, Inc. What's left of the surplus is almost entirely concentrated in China, which has been building a permanent petroleum reserve. The process isn't quite complete, A considerable overhang appears to remain off the coast of China's Shandong province, although this may have accumulated to feed new refineries, according to consultants IHS Market Limited. Working off the remainder of the global excess may take some more time, as OPEC Plus is reviving some halted supplies and new virus outbreaks in India and Brazil threaten demand. Still, the end of the glut at least appears to be in sight. Oil inventories in developed economies stood just 57 million barrels above their 2015 to 2019 average as of February, down from a peak of 249 million in July, the IEA estimates. It's a stark turnaround from a year ago when lockdowns crushed world fuel demand by 20% and trading giant Gunvor Group Limited fretted that storage space for oil would soon run out. Stockpile slump. In the U.S., the inventory pileup has effectively cleared already. Total stockpiles of crude and products subsided in late February to 1.28 billion barrels, a level seen before coronavirus erupted and continue to hover there, according to the Energy Information Administration. Last week, stockpiles in the East Coast fell to their lowest in at least 30 years. We're starting to see refinery runs pick up in the U.S., which will be good for potential crude stock draws, said Mercedes McKay, a senior analyst at consultants FGE. There have also been declines inside the nation's Strategic Petroleum Reserve, the Warren of salt caverns used to store oil for emergency use. Traders and oil companies were allowed to temporarily park oversupply there by former President Trump, and in recent months have quietly removed about 21 million barrels from the location, according to people familiar with the matter. The oil surplus that gathered on the world's seas is also diminishing. Ships were turned into makeshift floating depots when onshore facilities grew scarce last year, but the volumes have plunged, according to IHS Market Limited. They've tumbled by about 27% in the past 2 weeks to 50.7 million barrels, the lowest in a year, IHS analysts Yen-Lin Song and Fotios Katsoulis estimate. A particularly vivid symbol is the draining of crude storage tanks at the logistically critical Saldanha Bay hub on the west coast of South Africa. It's a popular location for traders, allowing them the flexibility to quickly send cargoes to different geographical markets. Inventories at the terminal are set to fall to 24.5 million barrels, the lowest in a year, according to ship tracking data monitored by Bloomberg. For the 23-nation OPEC Plus coalition led by Saudi Arabia and Russia, the decline is a vindication of the bold strategy they adopted a year ago. The alliance slashed output by 10 million barrels a day last April, roughly 10% of global supplies, and is now in the process of carefully restoring some of the halted barrels. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries has consistently said its key objective is to normalize swollen inventories, though it's unclear whether the cartel will open the taps once that's achieved. In the past, the lure of high prices has prompted the group to keep production tight, even after reaching its stockpile target. Mixed blessing. To consuming nations, the great destocking is less of a blessing. Drivers in California are already reckoning with paying almost $4 a gallon for gasoline, data from the AAA Auto Club shows. India, a major importer, has complained about the financial pain of resurgent prices. For better or worse, the rebalancing should continue. As demand picks up further, global inventories will decline at a rate of 2.2 million barrels a day in the second half, propelling Brent crude to $74 a barrel or even higher, Citigroup predicts. Gasoline sales are ripping in the U.S., said Morse. Demand all across all products will hit record levels in the third quarter, pushed up by demand for transport fuels and petrochemical feedstocks. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, Commissioners Need to Fix This Latest Problem at the Horseshoe and Fast, by Stuart Doreen. The horseshoe has a water bottle problem, and the Midland County Commissioner's Court needs to fix it, and fast. We now know that if you are a nonprofit and your group wants to give away backpacks to those in need, that you might as well pick somewhere else than the Horseshoe Complex, a facility that Midland County residents funded to the tune of tens of millions of dollars. And, unlike the Scarborough Sports Complex, Midland voters had no input on the decision. The operators of the Horseshoe have told those nonprofits that they have no ability to bring in their own water for events like backpack giveaways. None. Zero. Zilch. Instead, if they want to offer water to those coming to the Horseshoe for a giveaway, they are required to direct those people to concession stands to buy a $3 bottle of water from the Horseshoe operators, specifically Horseshoe Hospitality President Joe Kelly. That is right, $3 for a bottle that costs around 14 cents if purchased by the case at a local supermarket, and that price might be high. It isn't grand theft, but it is hard to see that as community-friendly. This water bottle situation is an outrage, and this community should tell the Commissioner's Court there are times when horseshoe operators should just back off. For instance, let's go back to the situation where a group is giving away backpacks to those less fortunate. What makes anyone think that $3 a bottle for water is appropriate for that Midland audience? They didn't show up at the Horseshoe with $60 tickets to see an entertainer or $50 tickets for a fundraiser. They came for school supplies. And why is this Commissioner's Court allowing the Horseshoe operators and Kelly to charge this group? Because it is in their contract. That is what commissioners who approved the contract said. Again, this is government Midland does not need. One commissioner, Randy Prude, said he has talked to Kelly, and Kelly suggested charging a fee of $1 per bottle to nonprofits that want to bring their own water. So, that $4 pack for water, let's assume $28 in the pack, will now cost $32 for that nonprofit that wants nothing more than to give away school supplies for less fortunate Midlanders. Anyone want to do math for that nonprofit wanting to bring in 1,000 water bottles? Instead of spending $142, the tab would now be $1,142. Again, the suggestion here is for that group to pick some other place. Kelly and Midland County don't deserve your business. They don't deserve to connect themselves with your philanthropy. Our community should not be forced to have water bottle sponsors for events at the Horseshoe. I don't think this community has to apologize for the nice facility that was built or the money provided to Kelly to operate the Horseshoe. I also do not believe the operations of the Horseshoe needs to be something that we give much thought about now or doing the new round during the new round of county elections. 2022, 3 seats will be up. It is time that the running of the Exposition and Convention Center in South Midland, called the Horseshoe, stays true to Midland values. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, April 20th. Michael Lozoya. With a heavy heart full of sorrow, we are saddened to announce the passing of our beloved Michael Lozoya on April 15th, 2021. Michael was only 22 years old, but lived his life to the fullest and never had any regrets. Michael was born on August 4th, 1998, in El Paso, Texas, and moved to Midland when he was 7 years old. Michael leaves behind his parents, Cesar Lozoya and Christina Scott, brothers Cesar Lozoya II, Stephen Lozoya, and sister Samantha Lozoya, nephew Cesar Lozoya III and Damian Lozoya, niece Natalie Lozoya, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, and many countless friends. Viewing will be held on Tuesday, April 20th from 2 to 9 p.m. with a rosary at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home, 405 North Terrell Street, Midland. Funeral Mass is set for Wednesday, April 21st at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. William Buddy Collins. William Buddy Collins, age 78, of Amarillo, passed away April 16th. Buddy was born in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, on September 19, 1942, to Alan J. and Kathleen Collins. Buddy is preceded in death by his parents, a brother, Richard Collins, and his walking buddy, Aggie. He is survived by his wife of 42 years, Shell Collins, son Chase Collins, brother Andrew Lila Collins, stepchildren Lisa Hohertz, Bass Hohertz, nieces Randa Collins, Lana Herrera, and nephew Scott Collins. A memorial service is planned at a later date. The family requests donations be made to a charity of your choice. Death notices. Bill Kirsch. Bill Kirsch, 72, of Midland, passed away Friday, April 16th, in Midland. Rosary will be held 7 p.m. Friday, April 23rd, at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Mass will be 12:30 Saturday, April 24th, at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklinwell's Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Bobby Bob Wheeler. Bobby Bob Wheeler, 72, of Roosevelt, passed away surrounded by loved ones in San Angelo on Tuesday, April 13th. A memorial service will be held in the community of Roosevelt at a later date. Bob's survivors include son Donovan Wheeler, daughter Teresa A. Avery, sister Jan Wheeler Combs, Nikki Black, brother Rod Wheeler. Arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Randall Hoyt Brooks. Randall Hoyt Brooks, 63, of Midland, passed away on Monday, April 19th, surrounded by his family. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, April 21st, at Nellie Picklinwell's Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 12 p.m. Thursday, April 22nd, at First Baptist Church Chapel. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Susie Marinis Evans, 74, of Midland, passed away April 19th. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Monday, April 26th, at First United Methodist Church in Midland. Celebration of Life will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, April 27th, at First United Methodist Church. Survivors include husband Donald L. Evans and children Lisa Moon, Jenny Evans, and Donald L. Evans, Jr. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklinwell Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, April 20th, 2021. School redesign plans up for approval. OA News at OAOA.com. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will consider approving School Action Fund redesign plans for Noel and Lyndon B. Johnson Elementary Schools and Wilson and Young Middle School when they meet at 6 p.m. today. The gathering will be held in the first floor boardroom of the Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. COVID-19 protocols will be in place. Noel, LBJ, and Wilson and Young received School Action Fund planning grants during the 2020-2021 school year. Approving these plans will allow these campuses to apply for the School Action Fund continuation grants to provide additional funding to implement their plans during the 2021-2022 school year and beyond, supplemental agenda material said. Leaders involved included a broad spectrum of people, district leaders, school leaders, teachers, parents, students, and community representatives in developing plans for all three campuses. Stakeholders expressed their desire for a growth mindset among students and teachers. opportunities for parents to engage with the school, and strong relationships between teachers and parents, the board workshop recap from April 13th said. Personalized instruction with a focus on blended learning is a key component of this work. Blended learning is defined as a student having some control, in some manner, over his or her own learning, the recap said. The plans also provide for social-emotional support of the whole child through mental health supports and after-school enrichment opportunities. Special recognitions include Tech Leadership Academy recognition, Best Communities for Music Education designation, introduction of UIL state qualifiers, and recognition of the Bronco Spirit and Mojo Spirit scholarship recipients. There also will be a presentation by the Communications Department and an executive session for contract renewals. On the net, tinyurl.com/2NVWX9S4. Panther Paws. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Premiums Panther Paws practices for the Black Magic Mojo Show, Monday, April 5th, in the Panther Paws Dance Studio. Black Magic Mojo Show, themed Happy Ever After, which will show at 7:30 p.m. on April 29th and April 30th, and at 1 p.m. on May 1st at the Ector Theater. Panther Paws has strong showing. OA News at OAOA.com. Going against some of the top teams in Texas, the Permian High School Panther Paws made a strong showing in the recent Crowd Pleasers event in Galveston. The competition was held March 26th, 27th, and 28th. Coach Kristen Carter said their solos went on March 25th. The Panther Paws earned overall national champions in Team Hip Hop and Team Open, received national champions in the medium team division for Team Open, Team Palm, and Team Contemporary, first runner-up in Team Jazz and Team Hip Hop, and placed second overall in the medium team division. The junior varsity team received national champions in Team Jazz, Team Hip Hop, and Team Contemporary, plus overall national champions in the junior varsity division. PHS also had a national champion duet performed by Claire Hill and Emily Hill. Emily Hill was also solo finalist and was awarded fifth runner-up out of 50-plus solos, the district newsletter said. Having made the finals in all five routines, Panther Paws competed against everybody regardless of size. We were going up against teams with like 60 and 70 girls, and we only have 21, Carter said. We ended up winning overall national champions in hip-hop and in our open category, so we have some really fun banners that we get to hang up on our walls. In the solo finalist contest, there were 50 girls, and Emily Hill got fifth runner-up. Her and her twin sister, Claire, they won the national champion duet. They did this really sweet dance about moving on because they're both going to college next year, Carter said. Last year was cut short because of COVID, so getting to go to this competition and finish what they started 2 years ago was gratifying. Some of the routines we reused from last year and some were brand new, but it was such an incredible experience, and the girls did amazing, and we had a ton of fun representing, Carter said. This year, she said Panther Paws was one of the strongest teams she's had the privilege of coaching. I would say just the difference is that we had taken a 2-year break from competing, so it's kind of like having to get your feet wet again. It was cool that we had 2 days because day one, they were amazing. They were on fire, but day two, they were hungry. They wanted to win, Carter said. We won 2 of our routines. It was a really big deal to win that overall division in a style division, is what they call it. I think we figured out there were about 20 teams that competed in this out of all the size divisions, she added. On a recent Monday, the team was practicing for Black Magic April 29th, 30th, and May 1st. Team Captain Emily Hill, an 18-year-old senior, has been in Panther Paws for 4 years. We felt really good about all of our performances, and we were happy with how all of them went, and so we were really happy leaving, especially since we got that hip-hop title. We had never won overall hip-hop before, so it was really cool to make history with this team. Hill said she and her twin, Claire, performed a lot of duets when they were younger, but then they got busy and they didn't perform as many. We knew we wanted to do one our senior year, and so it was really special getting to dance with her again, especially taking home first, Emily Hill said. Solo award. It was really cool, especially going in Callan Gruel, a 17-year-old senior, also is in her fourth year in Panther Paws. I felt really good about what we accomplished. We came together as a team even stronger. We, of course, went to compete and try to win, but we grew as a team. Every time we competed, we did even better on the floor. We felt confident and proud of one another. It was just a really good feeling, Gruel said. DPS Beginning Online Cold Case Series by Royal McGregor, rmcgregor at oaoa.com. Midland. The Texas Department of Public Safety announced Monday morning that it has partnered with DRB Media to produce an online series featuring cold cases from the West Texas region. DPS spokesperson Sergeant Oscar Villarreal said during a press conference at the Elizabeth and Herb Blankenship Lecture Hall, located in Midland College's Advanced Technology Center, the series is scheduled to start at 1 p.m. today. When asked about what case will begin the series, Villarreal didn't reveal any spoilers. You will have to wait until Tuesday, he said with a smile. That's what keeps the anticipation going. Villarreal said he expects one cold case to air each month. He also explained the cases will focus on the more than 6,100 square mile area of the West Texas region. Danny Barrera, the founder of DRB Media, said there are episodes that will contain graphic material. He said controversial content will be blurred to be respectful of the victim and the victim's family. The episodes will run 2 to 3 minutes long, Barrera said. The ultimate goal is to produce a 30-minute segment of either one case or several cases put together. Midland County Sheriff David Kreiner said he's excited the series will shed light on cold cases. We have several cases that have happened in Midland County through the years, and it will be featured in the new series presented by the Texas Department of Public Safety, Kreiner said. Villarreal said the cases will range from murder to sexual assault, missing persons, and unidentified remains. He continued to detail that the goal is to not only solve the crime, but bring offenders to justice. During each episode, we'll highlight a new case in hopes of bringing attention and hopefully encouraging and inspiring someone who saw something or may have seen something to come forward. Help us bring closure to families and solve these cases at the same time, Villarreal said. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Texas Department of Public Safety's spokesperson, Sergeant Oscar Villarreal, speaks about a new crime investigation series titled Cold Case Investigation of Texas Rangers in partnership with DPS and DRB Media Communications Digital News during a press conference Monday at Midland College Advanced Technology Center. The first segment of the series will be posted 1 p.m. on Tuesday on DPS West Texas Region Facebook page and DRB Media Communications YouTube channel. DBS hopes to reach new witnesses or obtain critical details toward cold cases. 444 days. For 444 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 16,891 total cases, 363 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 2 students, 2 staff. Midland County, 17,155 total cases, 266 deaths. Texas, 2,850,575 total cases, 49,595 deaths. U.S. cases, 31,484,148 total confirmed, and 564,292 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. Wild Wild West Festival. The Andrews Chamber of Commerce and CVB has scheduled the Wild Wild West Festival April, Friday and Saturday at the Ace Arena, 1441 East Highway 176, Andrews. There will be a rodeo, a Texas shootout, barbecue cook-off, living history, live music, carnival, and more. Vendors may call 432-523-2695 or email chambersecretary@andrewstx.com. Visit wildwildwestfest.com. OAC to reopen Tuesday. The Odessa Police Department detailed in a press release that Odessa Animal Control will reopen for limited intake on Tuesday. This decision came after Dr. Becky Battershell, DVM, tested animals at OAC, the press release stated. Dogs will reportedly be stringently inspected in hopes of preventing any further ill or diseased dogs from entering the shelter. OPD asks the public to vaccinate their dogs and not to let them stray to prevent the spread of infectious diseases. From staff reports. Closing prices. Posted, $59.86. Futures, $63.38. Natural gas, $2.749. Benchmark U.S. rose 25 cents to $63.38 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Honor, courtesy photo. The Ector County Sheriff's Office Communications recently presented a bag and goodies as part of National Public Safety Communication Week to Director Michelle Rocca and the Odessa Police Department 911 Public Safety Communications. This is Kay reading the Odessa American. Section A, page 3, Local News Roundup. Pop-up vaccine clinic. Medical Center Health System will administer first dose COVID-19 Pfizer vaccines at a pop-up drive-through vaccine clinic from 10 a.m. to noon, April 30th, at Bethlehem Baptist Church, 1000 West Clements Street. Stay in your vehicle. Vaccines are free of charge while supplies last. Appointments are not required. For For more information, call 640-1914 or 853-1344. CMN Fundraiser. Local Ace Hardware stores are once again joining forces to raise money for Medical Center Health System during the annual Children's Miracle Network Hospitals, CMN Hospitals, Roundup for Kids campaign. In the Permian Basin, Ace Hardware employees and customers have raised more than $190,000 for Medical Center Health System since 1991. On a national level, Ace Hardware has raised more than $130 million for CMN hospitals in the U.S. and Canada. Money is raised primarily through a register campaign where customers can round up their purchase to the nearest dollar when they check out. The 2020 campaign raised $25,000 for the Medical Center Health System. This year's Roundup campaign runs through April 30th. Customers can conveniently donate their change or more when they check out. 100% of funds raised at the Ace Hardware stores goes directly to benefit the sick and injured kids treated at Medical Center Health System. Funds are used to pay for equipment, research, supplies, charitable care, and a variety of other needs the NICU and pediatric units have. Participating locations include Westlake Ace Hardware, 4652 East University Boulevard, Westlake Ace Hardware, 1004 Andrews Highway, Midland, Harris Lumber, 1515 East Farm Road 700, Big Spring, Ace Hardware, 410 South Betty Avenue, Monahans, and Ace Home Center, 2100 West Dickinson Boulevard, Fort Stockton. OA News at OAOA.com. Police seek theft suspect. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a woman involved in a theft at a grocery store. OPD has released a photo of a woman, can be seen at tinyurl.com/TX2UP5FZ. The woman reportedly stole $271 worth of merchandise from the HEB located at 2501 West University Boulevard. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Detective Y. Medrano at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS, T-I-P-S, and reference case number 21-900-599. Arrest made for social media threat. OA News at OAOA.com. The Ector County ISD Police Department, very early Monday, was made aware of a social media threat potentially directed at two middle schools. The original message, found on an Instagram account, seemed to threaten Bowie Middle School or Crockett Middle School, a news release said. The district said it takes all messages like this very seriously, and ECISD police began investigating it immediately. The student who made the post was identified, taken into custody, and is facing criminal charges. The 13-year-old male admitted to making the post in order to scare people. The release said the district wants to thank those who notified it of the post and thank the ECISD officers who worked quickly to resolve the situation. The safety of staff and students is always the district's top priority, the release said. We hope this incident will be a reminder that this type of post may be intended as a joke or a prank, but it will not be treated as such, and it carries serious consequences, the release said. Kent Quick Robbery Investigation. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department is investigating a theft at gunpoint at a gas station. The reported theft happened at 9:01 p.m. April 16th at the Kent Quick located at 4117 Andrews Highway. The press release stated, investigation reportedly showed a man robbed the business at gunpoint. OPD has released a photo of the man that can be seen at tinyur.com/3H3WAKM. Anyone with information about the theft at gunpoint is asked to contact Detective L. Gonzalez at 432-335-3345 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS, and reference case number 21-0005986. Lowe's theft investigated. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department is searching for a man connected to a theft at a hardware store. The reported theft happened at 7:26 a.m. April 9th at Lowe's Home Improvement, located at 4101 East 42nd Street, an OPD press release stated. Investigation showed a man stole $530 worth of tools and left the scene in a white 2005 Jeep Liberty. A photo of the man has been released at tinyur.com/4YDFXN7J. Anyone with information about the man is asked to contact Officer D. Morgan or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS, and reference case number 21-900182. Walmart theft investigation. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department is looking for two men involved in a theft at Walmart. The reported theft happened at 1:33 p.m. March 28th at the Walmart located at 2450 Northwest Loop 338, the press release stated. Investigation showed two men stole an iPad and iPad case and left the scene. The iPad was valued at $700, while the case was valued at $100. OPD has released a photo of the two men can be seen at tinyur.com/7B3EN4T3. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Officer R. Jones at 432-335-3333 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS, and reference case number 21-0004851.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.